welcome to the first of our conversations on resources and practice for addressing sectarianism with young people. Joining me today is Mark Adams, Social Inclusion Officer at Glasgow City Council, where he runs the very successful Sense Over Sectarianism programme, among other things. Thanks for agreeing to have this chat with me, Mark. You have a lot of experience, and I'm not going to put a number on it because I don't know how many numbers there are or how many years it's been, but a lot of experience speaking to young people about sectarianism right through their school life. So from primary to secondary, you even talk to student teachers at university levels. What do you think? I mean, you've addressed this topic for the first time with young people again and again and again. So I'm wondering, what has worked best for you when you first broached the topic? It can be really complex, so it's curious to hear what you find works best, or what's the first thing that you would do.
Okay, well, the first thing I do is, as an old-fashioned youth worker, is get people to feel at ease, and you know, introduce myself as by my first name, even school, university lecturer, whatever class I'm in, and just appear to be open to listen. And I think that's key. I always feel like the young people that I connect with them. I had an incident at school last week where an 11-year-old kid disclosed something to me, which was pretty risk, and the teacher just couldn't believe it. I'd only met the boy for an hour. But if you've got just, I think the numbers are 16 years I've been doing this, and you develop a pattern of behaviour or a pattern of delivery that seems to allow young people to connect with that.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a favourite resource or activity that is always a go-to for you?
In terms of, it really depends who the audience is. I think that, so if you look at how different some of the workshops can be, so our Primary 7 workshop, which is our bread and butter, is reasonably structured and reasonably formal, but we kind of will open up with maybe a fun activity. So getting the kids, for example, to walk like an old person. And then we get them to walk like a celebrity. And then we get them to walk like a young person. And you can imagine the stereotypes and the hilarity that ensues. But right away, you're able to blow that away by the kids automatically go to an old person, someone very old and firm, normally using a stick with a broken back. Mm-hmm. You know, and then talk about, right, how many people have you seen like that this morning? Answer, none. Then a celebrity, and then you'll get variations from Beyonce to Noel Gallagher. And we're just like, okay, how many people have you seen walking like that this morning? None. And again, so that's just a bit of fun activity that takes like literally a minute, 2 minutes maximum, but it kind of sets the tone in terms of, right, okay, prejudice and stereotypes is what we're here to talk about before we get into more serious business. If it's like a university crowd, it's a bit different. So I kind of will just do, whose line is it anyway? I'll just address the audience, introduce myself, and just say, right, shout out the first word that comes in your head when we talk about sectarianism. Just the first word, and we'll just, that can go for quite a long time. It's a really good way to do it. In terms of getting them to tell you what they know, to talk right away, maybe quell a few myths right away, or maybe confirm a few thoughts right away, and kind of get the audience on side and open. And that kind of interactive style is probably my kind of trademark in that I work. We talk about what the audience wants to talk about, whether it's a Primary 7 class, an S2 class, an S5 class, or a university students, or probationer teachers, or whoever. And a kind of other go-to activity is really just a mind map. So if we're doing a workshop with a football team, for example, you don't generally have a lot of time, and it's based on that what you can get out of them in that short space of time. So a mind map works really well. And actually, at the beginning of a kind of series of workshops with Primary 7, we'll get the kids to do a mind map about sectarianism straight away. So we know what they know, what they think they know, we think they don't know. We can establish all that really, really quickly and help those kind of get straight to the crux of the important conversations that we need to have.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious because, I mean, you know, I've done this work not as long as you have, but a little while, and one of my go-tos is the A to Z of sectarianism, which is similar to the mind map, or the throwing out of words. And I'm just curious, how often do you get crossovers with other isms, for like racism or homophobia or anything like that?
All the time. So kids really struggle to differentiate initially the difference between racism and sectarianism. But generally, it's good if one of them brings it up, because then that gives us the opportunity to explain the difference. But also, when we do the first workshop with Primary 7s, we're going through definitions, and definitions is a key activity for us. understanding the definition of prejudice or their understanding of prejudice, how that then leads mm-hmm. to discrimination, how that then leads to bigotry. And then bigotry can be racial bigotry, obviously, or racial discrimination, or it could be homophobic, transphobic, whatever. And I think what I've noticed in recent years is sectarianism has become this catch-all term for all the bad things. So they associate racism with sectarianism, they'll associate sexism, even misogyny, with sectarianism, as it's become this kind of catch-all generic term of just bad behaviour or unacceptable behaviour or challenging behaviour.
Mm-hmm. I found it as well, because I think the complexity lies from it's become a bit of a catch-all term, like you said, but then you've also got the fact that all of those actually are elements within it as well. And I think that's where a lot of the confusion comes from.
Because the behaviours are always the same here. The behaviours are always, they just lead to a different conclusion.
And they sometimes stem from a slightly different place, but the behaviour to get there is the same.
I mean, you talk about the A to Z. We would use the A to Z when we have more time. We're in a set workshop process where we have a good hour and a quarter maybe to go at, because what you're talking about, where those come from, we do that in the same workshop. So we do the A to Z of sectarianism, and we'll feed that back, and we'll talk about it, and we'll, you know, agree what's positive or what's negative. We'll agree what's violent, what's not violent. We'll agree what we can do about it, what we can't do about it. But then we talk about the circle of influence. So it's about primary influences of young people, secondary influences. Because how do they know these names? Because kids use these derogatory terms, or they hear these derogatory terms, they have no idea the origin of these terms. So if they are then using them, that language just becomes repeated. So we think that that dovetails really, really well with the A to Z followed up in the same workshop by the circle of influence.
That's great. You mentioned before about building that trust with young people and getting a somewhat unexpected disclosure during a session. And I think a lot of us have been there, but I'm just wondering how you deal with those sort of either unexpected disclosures or unexpected questions or even behaviours within a youth work setting or young setting with young people.
So that's probably three different questions here.
It's so.
We work primarily in Glasgow, so we're used to all sets and types of behaviour, whether it's challenging. So we actually have to use our experience apart from anything else. So the first thing, because you need to have classroom management. Everyone in the class needs to know that you're there for them, for their benefit, and they'll get the most out of it if they engage fully. So you have to use your experience in those kind of class management techniques to get that involved. If you do get a disclosure, you always try and keep the young person safe, make sure they're not exposing themselves too much in front of their peers. But at the same time, you don't want to put a lid on it, because you want them to, if they feel they want to talk about that and they can keep themselves safe, then that's a good environment to do it, because I feel that we can build up that trust in the room. And also what you get is other kids will maybe support or challenge that behaviour depending on how that's went. So that can be good as well. So I always go back to this one when I was working with an S2 group in a secondary school in the east end of Glasgow, where we were doing Scarf for Life, and we're talking obviously the issue with bullying in Scarf for Life. And we talk, the young girl just puts her hand up and says, "Mark, that's what happened to me. I was self-harming, I stopped coming to school, blah, blah, blah." And I'm saying, "Look, you need to keep yourself safe here." She says, "No, Mark, I want to talk about it, because it wasn't until I addressed the bullying and finally reported it after missing school and self-harming and all the rest of it that it went away." And that's much more powerful than me standing at the front of the class and telling that. Much more powerful coming from their peer. So if you can get that disclosure and handle it in the right way and use it as an education opportunity, then that's so valuable.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's amazing. Sorry, I'm in awe of her at the moment, to have that confidence as well.
Totally. Because I think if what she was doing, she was flying in the face of this, "Oh, you can't do this because you'll be a grass, or you can't do this because people call you names." But she finally got to the point where anything that happens to me can't be any worse than what's happened to me already. And we can get that message out to more young people that, yeah, somebody calling your name, it's not as bad as you hurting yourself, or you missing school, or you excluding yourself from your community. It's never going to be as bad as that, the consequences of actually getting forward. And whether that's bullying on in the workplace, there was a quite high profile case at a Procurator Fiscal Office in Glasgow a couple of years ago, where an employee was continually bullied on sectarian terms until finally reported it. Senior manager ended up being sacked. Another one disciplined, another one resigned. But that was bullying in the workplace. So bullying had it only. So sectarianism can take its own form but bullying can be a form of it. Yeah. And yeah. And almost sectarianism would be a tool for bullying, for casual sectarianism. And that's just some of the examples we've come across.
Yeah. And it's there are examples as well of what we and a lot of young people will see every day, and will normalize the language and the
100%. And that's why we challenge the language. That's why the A to Z is so valuable, because particularly just now with the rising graffiti and kind of hate crime graffiti in particular, you know, the popularity of the Kill All Takes, for example, it's about the place, has been, and not just in Glasgow, I have to stress this, we get reports from all over Scotland on this, and most young people have no idea what a take is. They have no idea. But you know, they'll see the graffiti, they'll see a photograph of it, they'll see it on Instagram or whatever, and then they'll use the term, but they've not, they've got a vague understanding of what the term means, but they don't know the origin of it or what it actually means or how derogatory it actually is.
Yeah. Just on the back of that, and it's my last question for you because I'm going to keep it a bit short today, but when we're talking about this issue, we're encouraging young youth workers to have these discussions with young people as well. I've known a number of youth workers who have come to me looking for advice and help in discussing the topic. What should, do you think, any youth worker do before they start having this conversation, or what do you think is the key thing that they need to know and do before they can have a conversation with young people about this?
So they need to have a background knowledge of what they're talking about. I mean, I think that's an obvious one. Yes, you can do that. Well, I don't know that, and I'll go and find out and come back. But if you have got a knowledge of even just the well-used glossary of terms that was created by Ian Hunter when he was looking after bridges and barriers and designing bridges and barriers, really, I think that's invaluable to understand the basic. And then obviously the one we look at is the timeline that you created online. I use that always when I do teacher training as a teaching resource or a youth worker practitioner resource, not a kids resource, if you get the difference. So I think if you're going, they're the two go-tos which are really helpful for a youth worker, just really for their own knowledge, and also because a conversation will flow better if you've got some background knowledge, if you know who the UBF are, for example, or if you know who the IRA are. You know, and you can able to talk confidently about what they are, what their origins are, what they stood for, and what they represented, then that's makes facilitation much easier, I would suggest.
That's great. Is there anything else you wanted to add, or anything else you would like to other youth workers in Scotland to know about before we?
Don't be afraid of the subject. Don't be afraid of the topic, because some people would maybe feel uncomfortable talking about it. Well, don't feel uncomfortable talking about it, because other people are talking about it, kids are talking about it, young people are talking about it. And don't think it's not in your village, is my last piece of advice. I've had this before where I've been invited to do workshops and they'll tell me, sectarianism's terrible, but it's not in our village, it's in the next village. Or sectarianism's terrible, but luckily it's not in our community, it's in other communities, it's in every community. Whether it's highlighted, or whether it's a big deal, or you know, we go into communities where drugs are by far, and poverty are by far the biggest issues in that community. So yes, sectarianism is not the most important thing there, but it will be happening. And if you're there to talk about that, but use your youth work skills not to get blindsided. So if kids need to talk about something else while you're there, because you might be comfortable talking about sectarianism because you like football and you support one of the teams or whatever, actually they've got much bigger issues that they'd like to talk to you about. And you as a youth worker, you're there. Don't file that away for later on. Go and meet that head on.
Thanks for that, Mark. For any information on Censor for Sectarianism or any of the resources that we've mentioned today in today's conversation, you can find these on actiononsectarianism.info, and links will be shared alongside this recording.
Thank you so much, Mark. This has been great.
No, thank you for having me, Sarah. Much appreciated.